And welcome to another episode of G220 Radio. This is Ricky Gantz along with Mike Miller and Natty P. And again, we are G220 Radio, and we want to thank you for tuning into the program tonight. Tonight's episode is number 426. We're going to be talking about law enforcement and the Christian response. But before we get into that, Mike, brother, how you been, man?
Been doing pretty good. Been really busy at work, so kind of a drain, which I guess is a blessing since other people are not able to work, but it's definitely been the other side of me. It's more work than before the virus.
And that actually may be part of the reason why Natty P feels a little left out when he sends those messages and doesn't get a response, maybe.
Yeah, I definitely do not check my phone much. I've been working in a warehouse packaging up equipment. So yeah, they're very much not a lot of interaction.
Yeah, that's understandable. So Natty P, I know you feel a little left out there sending Mike messages and he's not responding, but how you doing, brother? You need to turn your mute off.
I'm unmuted. That's how I am.
Or the host could do it, you know.
Hey, you had your intro spot. It's my turn to talk. I'm doing good. It's cold out, and I don't like riding my bicycle in the cold. But I did today and got a good workout. And I was grateful God gave me legs and a bicycle.
Okay, that's great, bud. So, hey, exercise is good. You guys know me. I actually had the day off today, which was great. I was able to work on some things here in the office, get some things up to date. But I didn't get everything accomplished. Even with a day off, it's really hard to get all the things you need to get accomplished. Right, Mike?
Uh-huh. Yep.
So, I mean, I was trying, though, but I was playing around. You guys can see some new logos, some new setups here on the G220 Radio's platform screen and on our Facebook page and Twitter and YouTube channel as well. Tried to do some updating around there. Let me see here. Natty P sending texts. Okay. Let's get professional, man. Let me move that over here. So anyways, like I said, we have got a show tonight, episode number 426. We're going to be talking about law enforcement and the Christian response. And I'm going to get into a little bit about what brought this about after we introduce our guest, because I think it's a very important topic, and I think it can be helpful to us, not just during this time of the COVID-19 and quarantines, but in general. I think overall, this is something that we as Christians, especially those of us who do go out and open-air preach and share the gospel on the streets, are going to run into from time to time to law enforcement. And I think this is a good conversation that we need to have in how we react with them. So my guest tonight is Tim Barfield. He is the chief of police in a neighboring city. And so I'm going to have him introduce himself and tell you a little bit more about him, but also tell us about, because he is a Christian brother, and also have him tell us about how he came to know Jesus Christ. So welcome to the show, Tim.
Thank you. I appreciate the invite, and I think this is going to be an interesting conversation. So I really welcome the opportunity to do that. I am Tim Barfield. I'm the chief of police of Wellington, Ohio, and I've been there for about 5 years. Prior to that, I had done 32 years in Maple Heights, which is an interesting place and has changed a lot over the years. So altogether, I've been doing law enforcement. In October will be my beginning of my 40th year. So I've been doing this for a while. I would tell you that I've always been a Christian because I was raised in a church and, you know, I went to church on Sundays, but I really didn't come to faith until the early 90s. My wife and some of the children we had at the time moved to a new house and moved next door to a man that would get dressed up in a suit and go to work every day. It was pretty obvious what I did, but after a few weeks, I asked him what he did and he told me he was a pastor. I thought he was joking, but he wasn't. And that just led to some conversations and led to us starting to go to church and led to the conversion of my wife and I and our children. And so since the early 90s is when we've been, I guess, real believers. So, and that, of course, is life-changing. It has had a huge impact on how I police and how I kind of view the world.
Well, praise the Lord for that. Praise the Lord for that. I had a little technical difficulty there, but we will fix that in the long run, and I'll edit that out. But all right, so as we begin this conversation again, dealing with this topic, episode number 426, Law Enforcement and the Christian Response, I think it's very important, and I'm thankful to have a chief of police of a neighboring city here, Wellington, on to kind of, and being a Christian, to kind of share some of his experience and knowledge in this area as well. Now, you mentioned that you were the out in Maple Heights and now the chief of police there in Wellington. Maybe could you share with us a little bit of the difference between these two cities? Because I'm not extremely familiar with Maple Heights, but I am familiar with Wellington, maybe being a smaller, more country area. But maybe you can explain maybe some of the differences you would see from Maple Heights to Wellington, if there is any.
No, it certainly is. It's really two different kinds of policing, unfortunately. Maple Heights, though, when I started there in the 80s, was a very nice town, but it has changed a lot and it's become a pretty violent place. And so the beginning of my career was, working in a town where people worked together very well and there was not a high crime rate. And so that kind of policing certainly is a little easier to do. As my career went on, the town changed quite a bit and there became a lot of violent crimes, a lot of crime altogether. When I worked there, there were 50 policemen and I think there's currently about 32. So huge difference in the amount of policemen to do actually more work. When I left there, I left and did go to Wellington. And Wellington is a very rural, very country kind of town. The people are very friendly, very nice. And so it's just two different kinds of policing. Although ultimately I think the approach needs to be the same. The audience's participation is a big part of how you interact. And so when one town hates the police, at least the interactions that we have compared to a town that loves their police, it does give a different perspective on how we police.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I know I'm from the Elyria area, and so we do make it our ways out to Wellington during the summer months. Our church has a booth that we put up at the fair out there, and we always have some good interactions out there. But yeah, it's a very we love to go out to that area, go to the park out there, and spend time with our family, and just enjoying God's beauty here that's close to us. You know, the nature that's around us. And so as we get into this conversation, maybe could you share with us some of the difficulties you may have had as a Christian in law enforcement, and maybe even up to this point, things you may have to deal with either with people that are under you or people that are over with you, not to put any of that on the spot or anything like that, but maybe just some difficulties that you could elaborate on. And then some of the blessings that you've been able to, because of your faith, maybe encourage or share with others or just help them in maybe difficult situations, how your faith has played a part.
Sure. Yeah, there's a lot of those too. Some of the challenges when you become a Christian, the world sees us a little bit different. And so many people think that we're judgmental, even though they don't understand that we of all people know that we're sinners. But because we try to hold true to the word of God, many people immediately start thinking, oh, you think you're better than us. And that's kind of crazy. I see a lot of judgment there. You know, people are afraid maybe that we're Christians and we can't be real people too. I'm a Sabbatarian, which means that I don't go to the grocery stores or restaurants on Sundays. And so through my career, if I forgot to bring a meal or something, I wouldn't eat. And that was hard for people to understand. They'd say, well, we'll buy it. And I said, well, no, that kind of circumvents the whole rule there. So that's an interesting challenge. I guess one of the blessings and curses, though, sometimes is people don't understand this whole idea of separation of church and state. They don't understand that as Christians, we have rights and that we're allowed to follow through on those things. So when I would go to homes, and still to this day, if we go to a home on a domestic violence, I will often reach out to people and ask them, listen, do you folks go to church? And most people at least say they go to church. Then when you ask them what church they go to, sometimes that's a challenge, sometimes it's not. But if they do, I try to immediately hook them up with their pastor to try to resolve their marital difficulties. So, but when I do that, many times people say, well, hey, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to promote God. You can't talk about that. And so that's an interesting challenge sometimes. Mm-hmm. People don't understand that just because we're Christians doesn't mean we give up our rights. Where that's been a blessing, particularly in Maple, there's a church out there that at one time was in Maple Heights. It's called the Word Church, very big church. And I worked very closely with them and got them to give us business cards. And so when we would go to domestics, they would volunteer to counsel people. So when I was in a home, I would ask people, do you have a church? And if they said no, I said, would you be open to going to a Christian counselor? And many of them said yes. And so we handed out the business cards, and the church would then pick up that part of the counseling and the help there. So for me, it was a ministry. It was an opportunity for me to touch base with people and try to help people out. So it's a kind of a blessing and a curse there as we do that. Once I became a Christian, you know, I remember saying to my wife at one time, I don't know what I'm doing here now. I don't know what God wants me to do as a cop. I don't know how this works. But what I found is it's just a great opportunity to be a minister. Mm-hmm. I see people at their worst very often, and it gives me an opportunity. In Wellington, we started a drug program that was very, very successful. And we would just meet people where they were at. And people said, you know, boy, you know, who's going to come into a police station and ask for help? And I'll tell you what, a couple hundred people did. And they came in and to this day still come in. And we treat them like people. We don't try to judge them. We just try to connect them. So there's a lot of opportunities, I believe, for Christian police officers.
Yeah. That's very encouraging to hear. You know, just the opportunity when you said that when you would go into a house and there was some domestic violence, I think that's a great perspective to have, and a biblical perspective to have is if these people do attend a church, they do belong to a church, and obviously there's issues going on between them within their family, that's a church discipline area or a church counseling area for the church to offer the help or to discipline as needed. And so to be able to do that and point people to the church, that's very encouraging to hear. And I think probably, and you could speak to this, is there probably is a lot of officers, as you said, because of the church and state, you know, the way that people kind of confuse that, maybe think that they're not allowed to speak their what they believe. Because even from experience myself, when I've been out on some of the outreaches that we've been on, and I've been engaging with an officer or whatnot. Some of them have told me, you know, we're not supposed to speak about those things while we're, you know, with the badge. And so I don't know if it's just because they didn't want to get involved in that, or if they really just believe that, or if they just disagreed with us and just figured, hey, we'll just move on with something else. But I have heard that, you know, so it's encouraging to see that. Maybe you could speak to that. Maybe some of the even from the officer side of people thinking because of that separation that we hear about, that they're not able to voice and express their beliefs.
So I think there's a lot of confusion there amongst officers. I think all of the things that you explained are probably true. some officers probably just don't want to engage. They don't want to get involved in that conversation. And so they say, we're not allowed to do that. Some of them believe that they can't do that. Some of them probably just, just don't want to get involved at that time with that conversation. Maybe they're uncomfortable speaking about their faith. Even Christian officers believe that you can't. I had gotten called in one time for, I was talking to somebody trying to talk about ethics with an officer, and he was about to get married in a Roman Catholic church. So I asked him if he was a believing man. He said, yes. And we had a conversation about where the ethics come from in the Bible. And next thing I know, he had gone and talked to a boss, and the boss called me in and said, you're not allowed to talk to people about the Bible. And we had a conversation about that. And that boss actually believed we couldn't do that, but came to understand that that's not true, that we do have the right to our freedom of speech too. So I think there's a lot of misunderstandings. I think there are some avoidance issues, and maybe sometimes people just don't want to get involved in that conversation at that time.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So now this topic that we've got on tonight's program has kind of come about because, you know, as I mentioned earlier, being someone that goes out and does preaching on the streets, as Mike has done and Natty P also, we sometimes run into law enforcement. I remember, actually, I was just talking to another brother this morning about this topic, and we were discussing how one time when I had an interaction with a police officer out here in Cleveland, we were out preaching at the Cleveland Pride event, and this officer came up and wanted to shut us down from where we were and move us out of the area. And we was on a public sidewalk, an area that we're very familiar with because we preached there so many times at a lot of different events, or sometimes just going in downtown Cleveland and preaching. And I kind of pushed back a little bit with her, and, you know, not in an aggressive or ungracious manner, but just kind of pushed back and said, you know, we preach here all the time. We're not blocking anybody's, you know, area or way of getting through. Could you maybe get a supervisor and maybe clarify why we would have to move, because we are in a public area while we're preaching. We're not going up into the event. And she went to go check with a supervisor and then came back and told us we were good and we didn't have to leave. So sometimes, you know, when you're engaging, you don't want to necessarily be ungracious, but you maybe want to try to have some pushback. But then there are times where some of the officers have come out to, for instance, we've preached at the preterm in Cleveland, which is an abortion center, the largest in Northeast Ohio, I think even in the state of Ohio, that performs abortion. And we've gone to offer help to women there. We give information to go to pregnancy centers and places that they can go to for better help than to go in and end the life of their child. And often when we're out there, the police are called on us because the business there doesn't like us being out there and trying to, you know, offer help to these women to go somewhere else. And so they often call the police on us and say we're blocking the entrances to come in and out. And they make stuff up that's not true. And most of the time we have everything recorded on camera because we wear body cams when we're out. Just for that and for other reasons. But and they'll come out and they've told us, hey, you can't have amplification out here, even though the city has told us we can. But we've also, just with being in that situation, and when they come out, we didn't argue necessarily. We just kind of said, okay, they're not stopping us from preaching. They just said no amplification. So we comply with that, and we just go ahead and continue to preach because they're not stopping us to do that. With just being able to then proclaim it in the open air without the amplification, because that wasn't stopped. So those are two instances where one was pushing back a little bit and getting the rights to continue in an area we were, and then another where technically we probably could press it or maybe even go to court and win that. But instead of doing that, just trying to keep the peace with the police, because we do appreciate what they're doing, we just decided it's easier just to continue preaching. We'll just turn off the amplification. So those are two instances. But what I've seen lately is, especially right now, and not the focus of this, because there's a lot of orders that came down, and maybe you can even speak to this maybe later with all the stuff with quarantines and things coming down from governors. But just in general, good Christian maybe responses to law enforcement, and maybe explaining from the law enforcement side some of the things that some of these men, obviously not knowing all of them, but some of the things they may be going through their mind or experiencing as they're coming out to a call, if that makes sense.
Sure. I actually am sympathetic to both sides and I can understand both. So from the policeman's side, policemen are often expected to know everything. We're expected to be trauma surgeons. We have to be able to fight like John Wayne and shoot like Wyatt Earp. We have to be able to counsel like Dr. Phil. We have to be as good as any lawyer possible. We have to know all of the laws. And we have to be expert at fighting people without causing a scratch. So we really have to do a lot of different things. And so when we come to these things, and officers that maybe haven't thought these things through, and you know, they're told there's a disturbance down there, these people are blocking the doorway, you need to go check it out. They come down and they just want this problem to go away, right? They've got 5 or 10 other calls they got to get to, and they want this problem to go away. They come down and they try to talk to people. And when you don't want to do what they want, sometimes they're going to give a little bit of that authority to try to get the problem to go away. The problem with that, of course, is that we have rights too. Citizens have rights. We have this wonderful document called the Constitution. And, you know, it's interesting when it comes to the Constitution. So I trained some police officers, and I was asking some questions one time. I asked how many people in the class, and I did this in several classes, but how many people have sworn an oath to the Constitution? And everybody raises their hands. And then I said, how many people have read it? And generally about 2% of a class has actually read the Constitution. So many officers that swore an oath to the Constitution don't even know what it says. And that's a problem, and that's something we should address. But I think there's a good way to do that. So from the police officer's perspective, we get called to a lot of different things. We have to solve problems. Both sides have their arguments. And, you know, again, we're expected to be F. Lee Bailey on the street, be able to solve that. And oftentimes both sides are digging their feet in, and that is hard to solve. And from the mindset of policemen, oftentimes we think that we have to settle it, when sometimes we just can't. But so it's tough. And policemen are thrust into that. They're expected to know the answers. They're expected to know what all the rules are. And they're only given, you know, disorderly conduct, right? But they haven't read the Constitution, and they really don't understand always what people's rights are. And that's a shame, but it's true. And so it's a tough position for them to be in. On the other hand, all citizens have their rights. And I personally think that we should push it. I just think that there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. So I'm glad you have body cams. I think the right thing to do is to engage the officer politely, not get nasty, but do insist on somebody showing you what the rules are. If they can't do that, if it gets to the point where it's just getting ugly, I think it's probably wise to document as much as you can via body cam, via, you know, the documentation they're going to show you, what laws they're going to present to you, and what they say the outcome is going to be if you don't do something. But then not just leaving. I think you should leave. But I think you should follow up with the chief of police or whoever the person is. And I think you need to push it till there's a sincere conclusion, because not pushing it doesn't get the officers the training they need. It doesn't bring them up to speed on the laws, and their job is to protect all of those people. So we need to follow up and challenge, whether it's, I don't always think it's going to court, but I do think it's good to go to the chief of police or whoever's designated to follow up on that and say, listen, we understand that you guys have a tough job to do, but we have rights too, and your job is to protect them. And I would like to find a resolution so that this doesn't happen again. I think that's a great way to solve at least as many of these as we can. Sometimes that's not going to happen, but I certainly think that's a great way to start.
Yeah. I think that's very, very helpful. And when we talked on the phone, and you brought this up here, that something that I didn't really even cross my mind. But being in the military before, I don't even know why I didn't think about this, but the idea that a law enforcement officer has a lot of things that they need to be trained in and prepared for. And when they're going out to assess a situation, they're only going off the information that was given to them in a call. And as you said, there's so much that goes into what they need to know, that sometimes fighting over an ordinance number that maybe they don't have it, and they should know if they're going to cite a certain ordinance and say you're in violation of an ordinance, they should know what it is. But at the same time, giving them a little bit of grace to say, you know, okay, they've got a lot that they are dealing with. We don't know what their day's been like and how many calls they've been out on, and while they're still supposed to be sharp because they want to go home to their family, they want to keep the people that they've sworn to protect safe as well. Maybe just giving them a little bit of grace and saying, okay, like you said, trying to get as much information from them as possible. And if they're persistent on telling you to leave a certain area and you might get arrested if doing so, then maybe it's better just to take it up at another time. As you said, file a report. Get in touch with the chief of police, try to resolve it in another way, in a respectful way, but trying to do so that this way, when you do go out to these places again and you happen to run into those same officers, they're not necessarily seeing you as, oh, this guy again, you know, this guy gives us a hard time every time we get called out here to this place for the same things, you know. And I think that's helpful for us to kind of consider and to think about.
I agree. I'll give you an example. I think the people that have done good and bad in this, the Second Amendment people, I'm a very pro Second Amendment person, but some of the Second Amendment people that have to carry a rifle to an event or have to strap on the biggest gun they can and they walk around purposely, they're looking to start a fight. That's what it's about. And unfortunately, you know, we've probably all watched plenty of videos of that kind of stuff. And many times a cop comes off looking like a real donkey because he doesn't know the rules. I don't know that that helps the officer, but what it has done is it made it, because we've been challenged so many times, we have classes on that now, how to respond to that stuff and what the laws are. So that has actually helped policemen be better at responding and knowing those things. So I do think that when you run into a situation, you should pursue it so that the officers get educated and everybody, you can move on the next time having your rights insured like they should be. And the officer isn't embarrassed on camera, doesn't get chastised or doesn't feel like a jerk when this thing goes viral. But has had a chance to get educated and do a better job and be a better policeman.
Yeah. I'm wondering if some of the, and not that this is our topic tonight, and I don't want to get too deep in it, but I'm wondering if much of what we're seeing within the country over the last, I don't know, few years when it comes to like social justice and the media's, what's that?
I was going to call it like propaganda or spin.
Yeah. Yeah. The way that the media pushes the police as being, you know, on the wrong side of things and always in the wrong, maybe adds to some of the stress that an officer has when they go out on a call, because again, everybody's recording everything. You're trying to do things by the book. You may fail in that, but you're trying to do things by the book, but you know that everybody's recording. And if you do something wrong or you're off in a certain way, it's going to be twisted and spun in a certain way. And it may be that officer was just in the wrong, but that could be some more factors that add into when they go out on these calls and what they're expecting, especially when there's a lot of people standing around with their phones out.
Right. Well, it is a terrible situation and police are often painted in a bad light. And whenever there's a camera there, I mean, if I filmed everything you did, it would make you a little nervous. quite honestly, though, it's a little off track, but quite honestly, it's going to take some police leaders to have some guts to stand up and back up their people and to understand that, you know, that if their policeman didn't know the answer, that's the chief's fault. That's somebody in the administration's fault that officer didn't know the answer. So they have to take some responsibility there also.
Yeah. All right. So as we consider the topic that we are dealing with for Christians, and you're a Christian as well, we share the same faith. And so therefore, when the Christian is responding, do you think it would be helpful? Now, this may not be the case in every situation because you can't maybe in some situations do this. But one of the things we've tried to do, and again, we don't always do this because sometimes it's just an event that you're going to or you just decide, hey, I'm going to go and evangelize somewhere in the city. But when we're going to the college campuses per se, what we've tried to do is, and we've tried to be very consistent in this, to the best of our ability, again, sometimes we fail, but to the best of our ability is contacting the campus security and saying, hey, we're going to be out there. Or if it's an event in an area, going down and trying, if you know you're going to need a permit, trying to get that permit, and then maybe even speaking to a chief of police or calling and trying to speak to someone and saying, hey, we're going to be out there doing some evangelism. Or I know people, when we go to the abortion center, people call it protesting. We don't see it as that. We see it as we're trying to offer help to these mothers and proclaim the gospel to them. But maybe letting them know we're going to be down there. And with the abortion center, for example, we try to once a year with G220 Ministries, we've hosted this event downtown Cleveland at the abortion center, which we call Flood the Sidewalk, where we try to gather a large amount of Christians to just come out on the sidewalk and show their support and pray and reach out to these mothers and offer them help and show them that we love them and care for them and give them the gospel, because that's what everybody needs is the gospel of Christ. But we contact the police authorities during that time to let them know, hey, we're going to be out there. There may be a large group of people that show up. Our intent is not to block the driveways and the entrances or the exit from people coming in and out. But this is our intent to be out there. And every time we've done that, we haven't had any problems, you know. But in every situation, you can't do that. But maybe if you could speak to how we as Christians wanting to go to some of these places maybe could work with our law enforcement officers in those areas or the securities at these college campuses to better build the relationship and the rapport with them so that they don't see us as being a threat when we're out there. They kind of know what we're doing.
So I think, first off, I think that it is wise. If you have the opportunity to pre-plan that and touch base with law enforcement, I think that for all the things we've already talked about, right? So they know that you're coming. They can have the right people there, or they can maybe take a little time beforehand and make sure that they give the people that are going to be working the right amount of education, give them the chance to know the areas of law specifically that they're probably going to be dealing with. That will help the officers prepare. And everybody wants that, right? The police chief is going to want his guys to look really good. Maybe he even selects the right people to go there. That also gives you a chance to say, listen, we're down here. We're not trying to cause a problem. We're just trying to preach a gospel. And, you know, we have a First Amendment right, so we want to do that, but we want to work with law enforcement. So can you give us some guidelines, you know, where we can agree to work together to do that? Because we come to disturbances all the time. And if we knew one side was willing to sit down and talk to us first and pre-plan those kinds of things and try to operate within those guidelines and even get to know people on a face basis, first and foremost, that could certainly make that meeting go a lot better when the police have to come in because the clinic has now called and said, you know, they're blocking us. And so the policemen already are knowing to watch. And when they come up, they can say, well, no, actually they didn't do that. We were down here watching. And so it gives everybody a chance really to work together and to be on the same page, I hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So now that we've kind of talked a little bit about that, let's talk about an instance and from your professional understanding and, you know, being in law enforcement for so long, being a chief of police, one of the things that I've seen lately is officers come out to abortion centers or other places where someone is preaching, and they're trying to get an idea of what's going on. Maybe somebody filed a complaint. They're just trying to figure out what's going on, and they'll ask for a license to get the person to verify who this person is. Tell me about this. Is this something, as citizens, are we required? Now, I don't know if it changes from state to state or from town to town, but are we required to necessarily give them that? Me personally, I would just hand it over even if I didn't commit a crime, but some people argue that fact. And I'm just wondering, from a professional standpoint of knowing, you know, being in law enforcement for as long as you have, what are your thoughts on that? Is that just to help them assess what's going on? Maybe run a background on you real quick, or is it just so they can get the name and make sure you're not saying you're somebody that you're not, and so that they can have it on a file, or what?
So it's interesting, you know, in law enforcement, you know, we're a paramilitary organization, and, you know, we kind of operate on, somebody says, do this, you do that. You know, we have these computers that gather information, right? And when we go to a call, we want to know who we talk to. So when Ricky Gantz calls to complain to the chief on Monday morning, the chief can look up and say, well, he was at this call. So he knows what that's about, right? And so police often confuse rules with law. And so they're told, we have to have a name on this call. So they go and they're thinking, well, that's obviously, like, we have to do this. And so, you know, I know people that have been arrested because they failed to give their name when that's actually in, and we'll talk about what that law is in a second. But at the time that they refused to give their name, they weren't violating any law. And so that was a problem. The policeman had overreacted and had not followed the law and actually had violated somebody's rights when doing that. So, you know, one of the things we need to do as police officers is educate our people the difference between rules and laws, kind of like what we're dealing with right now with this whole, you know, this whole virus issue, right? The difference between rules and laws. But so a police officer has a right to identify somebody that's in a public place that is suspected of committing a crime or is a witness to a violent felony. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you're at the scene of a protest, but no law has been violated, then the police officer can always ask for your ID, but cannot force you to give that ID and cannot arrest you. I would be making sure, like, if the officer says, listen, if you don't give me your ID, I'm going to arrest you for whatever, you need to probably just make sure you ask and are very clear, because maybe there was a law violated and the officer's trying to figure out who the people are because they're trying to investigate the crime. If there's been a law violated, or they truly believe there's been one violated, and they're investigating that, you are going to be obligated to give your identification. If they're just trying to document all the people that are there, and there's no law that's been broken, then there is no obligation in Ohio to have to identify yourself.
That's good information to know. Like I said, me personally, whenever that's been asked of me, I've always took it as the fact that they're just trying to get the information or write down a name or whatnot. And I've always just turned it over because I don't have any, like, hidden, you know, what do you call it? Any laws that are broken laws that are out against me, or, you know, I don't have
warrants.
A record. Warrants. Yeah, warrants. There you go. Thank you. I don't have any of those things that I'm aware of. I don't have any of that. So I'm not so much fearful of that. And at the same time, I want to try to be, work with them in doing their job. But at the same time, again, not wanting to violate the rights that I have as an American citizen, to kind of maybe push back on some things. And as you said earlier, maybe get a little bit more information to find out what's going on. Why are they asking for that? You know, why is it necessary? Why do they need that if I haven't broken any laws? Now, speaking of submitting to the authority and kind of working with these officers, Romans 13 is a chapter that so many we go to that speaks about submitting to these governing authorities over us. And it says, let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. And so we know as Christians that God has established these authorities over us. And in each of these, well, in our country, and then we have these states that have governors over it, and then so forth. It just kind of continues to go down and trickle down. And then we have law enforcement who have their authorities, and they kind of go down from, police unit to unit. But where would you say, because as a Christian, I would say that when it comes to somebody insinuating that you need to disobey God in, maybe the preaching of the gospel. If you're proclaiming the gospel to somebody, you're sharing the gospel with someone, and they say, hey, this is against the law to do that. Well, as a Christian, I'm going to continue to preach the gospel and share the gospel with people. If they say, hey, you can't meet as a church, and we become a nation that no longer allows Christians to meet as a church, I'm going to say, hey, we may have to go underground like the church in China right now, but we're going to continue to meet and come together as a church. So, how, as someone in law enforcement and a brother in Christ, what would you say about those things where the law then would contradict God's word? And is there anything that you would say you see within the law that would kind of, I'm trying to think how to word this, you would see where that is maybe at in our country, in our area in which we live, or leading that way, per se?
So this is a hotbed topic right now with the virus and the discussions on some of the police overreaction. And this is where policemen have to know the difference between law and rules, because we enforce law. We don't enforce rules. But because we're good at enforcing things, all the politicians want the policemen to go out and enforce rules that are generally Department of Health rules. It's not a law enforcement issue. It's a rule that's been established by a government agency. So that's interesting. Now, I will tell you, I have this discussion with a lot of people that say, Romans 13, which I'm a Romans 13 minister. I get it. But we have to understand who the rulers are. And in most places, you have a king, you have these people that are rulers, but the ruler in this country is the Constitution. That's the rule of law, and not somebody's interpretation of that. Now, I'm not gonna argue with anybody tonight about whether murder should be, that's not up to anybody. Murder's wrong. And so if a policeman comes and you've murdered somebody, then you need to submit. If you've broken into a house, if you've stolen from somebody. But if the governor interprets that your church can't meet, I'm not sure the police should be involved in that at all. I don't think that the local law enforcement should be called in to enforce whether a church is meeting. Let the health department take it to court, because regardless of what the governor or any of these politicians say, we have a constitution that says you have the right to due process, and before they can take your rights away, you have the right to see a judge about that. So we have to be careful of how we look at the Romans 13 in America, because the constitution is our law. The governor actually is he serves us. We don't serve him. He's elected to represent us, but he is not elected to rule over us. Laws rule over us in America, not people. So that's always an interesting topic with people. And so don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we shouldn't submit, but we need to remember what we're submitting to, because we have a constitution that tells us we can and can't do certain things. I'm not so sure what the governor's doing is legitimate, and any of these governors, quite honestly. And I think that many of these challenges are going to come up here. I see in Michigan, they just brought a lawsuit against the governor for, you know, not allowing the sale of seeds and certain foods and paint. And, you know, so where does a governor have the right to say this business can succeed and this one can't? So this is a really deep subject. I think that we need to be wise. I think that we need to be careful at the same time.
I appreciate your answer, mainly because I'm in Louisville and they made the national news this past weekend with Mayor Fisher here in Louisville saying drive-in churches, you can't have them. And he was going to have LMPD, the Louisville Metro Police Department, come and take names over the weekend. Kentucky State Police Troopers went to a Baptist church just south of Louisville, but not actually in Louisville, to take down license plates, put notices on cars. So something that is very real, you know, in my area where I'm from. And just trying to think through these issues with it, because I go to church in Louisville. I was going to be at church with my pastor and someone else. And now I'm sitting here is like, well, is this considered going to church? I'm here. I'm doing something. With it, it's not the entire church gathering. And just to think through these issues, I know, at least for me and my family and my pastor and all of them, a very real issue with all these threats coming down the line, and to think, okay, how does this, you know, work with my First Amendment? And, you know, is what the governor says here in Kentucky, limiting to less than 10, is that something as a recommendation, or is that actually a law, a rule that can be enforced? So your kind of answer kind of helps to at least get the categories needed to kind of think through some of these ideas a little bit better and deeper.
Although I do think the answer to all of these things is to petition the court. I think the churches should have collectively gotten together, although I think there are many churches that are impotent. I think the churches should have probably gotten together and challenged the governor and said, listen, the state has no authority over the church. We have a specific constitutional amendment that says the state doesn't have authority over the church. But we should have challenged that in court and way before we got to Sunday is what I think we should have done.
Yeah. I know a lot in Louisville have just gone like, because of the severity of the virus, we're going to obey kind of the governor's rules for the love of neighbor. That's kind of been the rule. But a question is, does this set a bad precedent for future activities?
And again, I think that we're going to see some challenges out of this. And I think that, you know, this has never happened before. This is not the history of our country. We have never had governors and elected people take things to this extent. We asked, my reading, my understanding of the law is that they can only quarantine infected people, not healthy people. And so I think there's going to be challenges. I do think there's a good place to be a good neighbor, but I do think it sets bad precedents. I think that we're foolish if we don't challenge these things to get some clarity for the next time around, because flu season's going to come again.
Yeah. And I think that's really, that's the thing. I think that there's a lot of overreaction to what's going on. And maybe even possibly, with many of these governors putting down these rules, maybe there's a genuine desire. I don't want to be the one that's judging their heart on this, to try to keep the people of their state safe. However, as you said, when you do certain things like these, it does set precedent that then will have effect in the future. Because if you can easily just put a rule out there and shut down churches, it may come to a point where they just decide you get a governor in there that doesn't like Christianity and wants to shut it down. And they start finding ways and loopholes to do that. And this then becomes an area, I think, that as Christians, that we are to continue to gather and to proclaim the gospel and to serve God and honor God over men in that situation. Right now, personally, I don't think that that's the intent of some of these governors. Maybe not all of them, but I don't think that's the intent of some of them. I think they're trying to keep their people safe. But at the same time, again, we want to honor God in all the things that we do. And as Mike said, you know, even loving our neighbor, I think that should have been something that if the governors felt so strongly about, leaving that up to the churches to say, hey, we would encourage that you would maybe not gather as many people together or have a couple different services or do online streaming, or if you do have a small church and it's a younger congregation, maybe just take those precautions of social distancing and trying to keep people, you know, safe within your little congregation, but leaving that up to the pastors and elders of those churches to make those decisions based upon each area and where they're in. If it's a high population that's having this epidemic pandemic happening to them, then okay, maybe it's wise for your people. But, you know, I think that that's kind of what we're dealing with at this moment. And those are things we have to think through as Christians, because there's a lot of officers that are out there trying to enforce that rule, as you said, and maybe not understanding, as like you said already, that it's a rule, it's not law.
Well, and those police officers are kind of thrust into that position because, you know, the people above them are telling them, well, listen, you got to go out and enforce this. And I'm telling you, this is a law. And so there's political pressure, and politics and law don't really mix well. So we do have to be very careful. I would suggest, though, that it's always a good idea for people to make suggestions. We have to be careful with the church. You know, the church has been neutered in Canada in many ways because of their hate speech laws. And we're not that far behind in this country. So if we don't stand up now, that next governor could be sooner than you think.
Right.
Yeah. That's what I'm seeing is it's kind of like we seem to have this thing in this country where we're at least as of late this century, where if something's really, really frightening or somebody could get really, really hurt, we have no qualms about just giving the government another inch and another inch and another inch. And that's one of the things that I'm wondering about this lockdown is how far are we going to let them go? Are we out of what kind of fear? And at what point, if we haven't stood up by now, when will we stand up?
Well, that is a fear, right? And part of the problem is the church. Again, this is why this is a hotbed topic. I've had many people tell me, well, the opinions you're saying, you don't sound like a Christian because we're supposed to obey the authorities. I find it interesting, all the people that quote Romans 13, but forget about remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, or any of the other commandments. So, but I do think it's incumbent upon the church. Remember, so Romans 13, this is what people argued when we founded this country, right? But we had this Declaration of Independence. If you look at that, that was a covenantal lawsuit. It was a covenantal lawsuit against the King of England for violating the biblical rights of the people that were his subjects. And so there is a time and a place to stand up against government because God is to be obeyed above government. So I don't think we should just blindly... I think we need to seriously look at what Romans 13 tells us. I'm not asking people to be disobedient. I just think we need to think about, you know, render under Caesar the things that are Caesar's, but the things that aren't Caesar's and all those things in the Bill of Rights, those are the things that particularly were protected In fact, it says they're granted by God, right? By our creator. They meant God. It should have been a little clearer, but they said they're granted by our creator. So these aren't rights bestowed upon us by our government. These are rights that our government is told, you cannot touch these. That's why this is particularly a difficult issue.
Right. And I think that was the most helpful distinction that I gleaned from this show so far is when you highlighted the ruler that we submit to is the Constitution. And so while there are those ministers who we ought to work with and submit to, I think that was a very helpful distinction. One thing that I kind of wanted to bring out too is how far on the other end should we go with working with law enforcement? Because we know that on the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, whoever forces you to go 1 mile, go with them too. And my understanding of that text is that in those days, the Roman soldiers could force someone to carry their equipment 1 mile. So how does that apply to our conversation?
I don't know that we're, I certainly have a great love for law enforcement. And I think most policemen do the right thing almost all the time, given all the things they have to be involved in. I think, you know, all the things we've talked about today, I think it's wise to befriend the police. I think it's wise to give them advance notice that you're going to be there so everybody can be prepared, even them. Maybe they sit down and brush up, hey, I got to know what the laws say about this. I certainly think it's our job to work with people. I think that law enforcement, I consider myself a Romans 13 minister. I believe that I bear the sword and I don't bear it in vain. But I also want to be very cognizant of what authority I really have and how should I exercise that authority? How should I treat the people that I'm dealing with? Even the murder suspect. Do I treat them like a piece of garbage or do I treat them like a human being? Because my job is just to bring them to the court. My job isn't to punish them. So, you know, those are things that I think all policemen should struggle with. So the more we engage officers, the more we educate them in a loving way, not trying to challenge everything they say, or if we're going to challenge it, maybe we challenge it, you know, not at that scene tomorrow or, you know, on Monday, if this is a weekend, and go in and sit down with the chief and say, listen, we want to work together. Help us understand, help us how we can help you understand. If your officers did something wrong, we're not looking for their head. We just want to educate them. And if there's some way we can do it better, help us.
I think that's really helpful. And that's something I hope would be edifying and encouraging to those who tune into this and a large listening population that we have is very evangelistic. And so I hope that would be something that we can all glean from and learn from. One question I want to ask you before we end to kind of close this out is it was brought up earlier with the disorderly conduct. Sometimes when you're having conversations with people and or a law enforcement officer, and maybe you're saying, well, look, I've looked at the ordinance and I don't see how this ordinance applies. And then that charge of disorderly conduct is thrown out. Now, this may vary from state to state. I'm not fully aware, you know, how they maybe write it up. But maybe from your experience, what really goes into what is disorderly conduct? And because sometimes, can it be subjective? Because if somebody just says, hey, you're being disorderly, you're bothering me, you're disturbing me, you need to be stopped. And then they call and say, hey, this person's making this racket or whatnot. So what would you say disorderly conduct is? And is it something maybe officers throw out there to kind of get the people to pull back? Not in every case, but if that makes sense, where I'm trying to go with that.
Oh, sure, because disorderly conduct is used as a catch-all. Mm-hmm. And policemen often throw it out there. I will tell you that many policemen don't know what disorderly conduct is. And you say, is it subjective? Of course it is. That's why we have court cases. And that's why a lot of disorderly conducts get dismissed, because the policeman didn't appropriately apply the law. Again, not that I want to take up for all policemen all the time, but they're asked to do a lot of things a lot of times. So I think the more grace we give, the better off we'll be. However, you know, disorderly conduct, if you're so intoxicated or drunk that you can't take care of yourself and you're endangered to yourself, that's disorderly conduct. If you're doing something that's grossly offensive, if somebody swears at me, I can't arrest them. But if they swear in front of a bunch of little children and somebody there is offended by that, they may be able to be arrested. Really kind of depends on what they're saying or what they're doing. So, you know, the law really kind of depends on what's going on and who the victim is. But there are specifics in disorderly conduct. So it really is not a catch-all, although they often say that it is. Policemen have been better educated about what disorderly conduct is. But oftentimes throwing out, "You're disorderly, I'm going to arrest you," gets a lot of people to back down. And ultimately, the policeman just wants to move along. Nobody wants to be in these gray areas where a lot of these things unfortunately end up.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for that. That was very helpful for us to learn from. And it's been a blessing having you on the program tonight. I've enjoyed having you on and listening to you explain from your experience and being in law enforcement for as long as you have, some of the things maybe we don't really understand or we think about that officers may be experiencing, or the things that they have to know when they're called out onto these calls. I'm going to go ahead and give you any last thoughts that you would want to share with us, maybe something that you wanted to touch on tonight or something that came to mind in the conversation that maybe we didn't bring up. But any last thoughts before we close out the program?
You know, just a reiteration. I said most cops do the right thing almost all the time, and I really believe that. This is it's a hard job, and we see things that most people would never see, and we see a lot of it. And so there's an impact with us. So I guess in answering the whole question tonight, do policemen sometimes do wrong? Yes. Can we be gracious and try to work with them? And if we have a complaint, can we try to do it the right way? Maybe not a scene there today, maybe take it up at another place at another time where everybody can save face and everybody can learn better. I certainly think that's a great way to respond to law enforcement as Christians.
Well, amen. And any ways or any things maybe that you would think that you would come to mind that may be helpful, any programs or any videos or any things that you would suggest or that you've been a part of or anything that you've written that could be helpful to our audience? If you have anything, please share it with us now.
You know, I write for lawofficer.com. Care to look up any of my articles? I think you'll find the same kind of sentiment there. Trying to be, I hope, reasonable and trying to work with people. And so if you're interested in any of that kind of writing, that kind of thought, that would be there. I can't think of anything else right off the top of my head. Although I really have enjoyed the opportunity to talk to you. Would love to be able to do that again if it's a topic that would benefit people. I think the conversation today, I think, would be incredibly helpful to the general public, not just the Christian, but right, certainly to the Christians.
Right. Absolutely. Well, thanks again for coming on the program tonight. Again, we really do appreciate having you. It has been a blessing. And that's been G220 Radio for tonight. Next week on G220 Radio, we're going to be talking about what is communion. And so we'll tell you more about that throughout the week. We still have a book giveaway. We are still in a Bible giveaway. We're going to be giving away the Spurgeon Study Bible. It's a CSB if you use the CSB, but we have the Spurgeon Study Bible. You need to write us a short, what'd I say, an essay, guys? It was like a little short paragraph or essay.
Yeah, about 15 pages, something like that. Yeah.
Not 15 pages, but a short little essay about the last 10 shows of G220 Radio that you've listened to, how it may have challenged you, encouraged you, or even if you didn't agree with some of the things we've said on the program, we want to hear from you. And then from that batch that comes in, we will do a drawing and one lucky winner will get this Spurgeon Study Bible.
Is that so, we have to write about the last 10 episodes. Like,
you can't be part of it.
Yeah, one of the last 10 episodes, but you're not eligible.
Just one episode. Okay, well, that's the only reason why I haven't entered so far is because I thought I had to do 10 episodes.
Yeah, but you're not eligible. You're a host of the program. Now, you can have your brother or family member do that, I guess, if you want to get around.
I'll ghostwrite. Pseudonym.
All right.
So what is the CSV, if people don't know?
CSB, it's the Holman Christian Standard Bible. I have one of them. It's nice. Yeah. It's nice.
Not the Holman Christian. It's just the Christian Standard.
Oh, well, what's the difference between the Holman Christian? That's who makes it is Holman, man. Right?
They changed the text, changed the name. There is a difference.
Oh. I don't personally use it. And see, we're trying to give this away, Mike. I don't personally use a CSB, but
I think the CSV is very good, or CSB, whatever you want to call it.
So anyways, that's been the show for tonight. We can continue this conversation later. God bless, and may you be glorifying the Lord in all that you do.
Is that a cross?
No.
What's that? It looked like you were like...